Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford, and I'll be taking your calls and answering your questions for the next hour or so. Lisa is here with us, screening calls and keeping things light and fun. If you want to join in, simply press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will be right with you. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. Sit back, relax, and listen, or jump in and ask your question. You can even bring us your opinion. It's up to you. This is your show. You can ask questions about fuel mileage, tires, engine, EGR, aerodynamics, truck specing, maintenance, taxes, financial planning, getting started as an owner-operator, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the audio road.
Hi, this is Lisa. Remember to talk to Kevin. Press 1 so I can pick up the phone and screen your call. You know you'd rather talk to me anyway. Or just sit back, relax, and listen to the show. And at any time you have a question, just hit 1 and I'll pick up the phone.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Lisa's here screening your calls. If you're listening to us online and you want to jump in and grab a line, you might want to do that now. The number to dial, 347-884-8327. That'll get you into the live call here. And I've got a couple things I'm going to go through. We're going to do the market demand index and go through rates and what's going on in the industry and what we expect for the rest of the year. And then once I wrap up a couple things, we're going to go right to questions. And we're going to do a recorded hour tonight. So it'll be all questions about whatever it is you want to talk about. So join us on the call, 347-884-8327. And then once you're on there, let's go ahead and get those questions lined up. And the way you do that, once you're on the call, you press 1. Lisa will screen that call. And then we will get to those calls during the recorded hour here coming up in just a couple minutes. But you might want to get those questions in early because we normally run out of time before we run out of questions. Now, right now, there are only a couple. So now's the time to press 1, get your question in, and we'll get to those as many as we can here real soon. This is our first actual live conference call this week. We had 2 nights with some technical difficulties, and you know, we really just keep kind of pushing the limits on the technology. We built the mobile studio over the summer, as many of you know, and we got through that and we got the technology up and running. And it just, you know, we're pushing the limits again on it. We always want to make it better. We always want to be able to improve on what we're doing. And the ultimate goal of the mobile studio was to be able to park anywhere and do the show with really zero support, whether it's from a truck stop, a rest area, wherever it might be. And we got really close. We weren't 100% there. We needed to test a little bit more technology, which we've been doing this week, and that was part of the issue. The other part is we've already moved out of the first mobile studio, which was designed really just to get us up and running. I mean, we bought a dirt cheap RV, and we have been living in it since, well, I guess it would have been July, right after the CMC, and that was in order for us to test all the technology and make sure this was going to work. Now that we've proven we can do it, we're not 100% there yet, but we know we can do it, we have moved into our permanent, or for now, anyway, mobile studio, which is a fifth-wheel trailer, a 43-foot trailer. And we're pulling it right now with a truck that Bruce Mallinson from Pittsburgh Power built. It's an interesting truck to be driving. It is an 89 T600 that Bruce set up to pull a fifth wheel RV. And it's got a mechanical Cummins Big Cam 350. I have no idea how much horsepower this engine's actually putting out. But I know when I picked it up the other day, Pete at Pittsburgh Power said they would never build one like this, not for a customer. This one was hotter than they would build them for customers. So it's been an interesting drive so far. Ultimately, we are building a new glider kit to pull this. So we will be in a new 2011 Coronado pulling the trailer, and this will be full-time for us. We'll be out on the road every day. We'll be at truck stops. We'll be at the truck shows, all the events. Wherever you are, that's where we'll be. So we're pretty excited about that. But along the way, we've hit some bumps on the technology, and part of it this week was a new piece of technology we're working on, and the fact that we had to move everything over from the original RV mobile studio to this trailer, and we're still working on ironing out some of the kinks in that. So bear with us. We'll get that done. I appreciate it. If we're going to get to the calls here in just a couple minutes, so you might want to jump in now. 347-884-8327 is the number. If you're on the call, be a good time to press 1 on your phone right now and get your question lined up. We only have a couple right now. And what normally happens is we get towards the end of the show and then hands start going up everywhere and we run out of time. So jump in now. Question, comment, topic, whatever it is you want to talk about. After I finish up the market demand index, we will go into the recorded hour. So line up your calls right now. All right, interesting trend going on in the market demand index. I'm looking at it now, and we're into the fourth quarter. So I think it's time to look at the year and see what's happened and maybe where we're going for the year. If we go back to a year ago, the beginning of the fourth quarter 2009, when we were hoping we would see a jump in the numbers, we really didn't. I mean, we were at 3.69 on the market demand index. Remember, the higher that number goes, the better it is for us. And we finished off the year at 4.24. I mean, that's virtually flat. Now, in the end of January, middle to end of January, we started a climb that was just phenomenal considering we had been flat all of 2009. And we climbed all the way up to 12.9. We would have peaked around, I guess it would have been the end of the first quarter. And the second quarter, we kind of bounced around in that 12 down into the 10 or 11 range most of the second quarter. But then in the third quarter, we really started dropping. And we dropped all the way back down into the sevens, which some of that was expected. What we haven't seen is any real recovery from that. Third quarter has been very flat. We had a slight bump up at the end of the third quarter, kind of that expected run up, you know, end of the month, end of the quarter kind of thing. But we never even made it back to 8. We kind of peaked at about 7.6, and now we're on our way down. This past week, we lost 2%. We're down to 7.5. I keep saying I'm not going to make predictions because just about every time I do, I'm wrong. But I would expect that we're not going to see anything significantly higher than where we are right now. And I would guess that we're probably going to decline the rest of the year or at the very least stay flat. we're kind of right now at this 7 number, 7.5 or so. We're at the point where you've got some negotiation power in the market, but not a lot. I mean, this is almost the equilibrium point between being able to negotiate better rates or not. We're going to talk about rates here in just a minute. They're actually not bad. But I don't see any real increase in demand the rest of this year. I think what you're seeing for freight volume right now is about as good as it's going to get between now and the end of the year, and it may even go down some. As far as rates go, average equipment rate was up 1% last week to $1.89. Van rates up 2% to $1.66. Specialized up 2% to $2.35. Reefer rates were flat at $1.84. Flatbed rates down 1% to $1.71. I would expect rates are going to stay pretty much flat through the rest of the year. We may even see some decline, but I don't think it's going to move much in either direction. Good news, though, fuel prices are way up. Hopefully that'll keep going. We'll see that trend up. We were $2.95 was the average 2 weeks ago, and we're up around $3.10, the average for last week. So that's good news. That may put some upward pressure on rates. But I would really expect we're probably peaked right now as far as demand goes. All right. So we are going to start our recorded hour right now, which means from here on out, pure questions and answers from you. And we're going to get started on that. If you want to join us, there are still some lines open, 347-884-8327. More importantly, if you're on that call, press 1 right now and get your call lined up. Question, comment, topic, whatever you got, press 1. You'll talk to Lisa first, and then we will get to those calls here. We're going to get started on the recorded hour right now, so stand by. Good evening, and welcome to the show. I'm Kevin Rutherford, and this is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. I'm here tonight and every night to improve your bottom line and make you more successful. We talk about the things that are important to you, your business, your money, your life, and your success. Thanks for joining me, allowing me to ride along with you for an hour tonight. I consider it my mission on this show to bring you the very latest information to help you be more successful, make more money, save more money, and avoid scams and ripoffs. We can talk about trucks, money, retirement accounts, fuel mileage, maintenance, health insurance, technology, taxes, financial planning, current events, politics, or anything else you'd like to bring to the show. The website is letstruck.com. I want to remind everybody we are coming up rapidly on Election Day. If you are not going to be home, you might want to check. You do want to check and see if your district allows early voting, or if not, get your absentee ballot and get that done. Remember, if you don't vote, you have no right to complain whatsoever. Get out and do your part. Do a little bit of research, too. You know, find out who you're voting for, what your options are, and make sure you're voting for somebody who really aligns with your beliefs, whatever they are. We obviously all don't believe in the same thing, but we need to get out and vote and make sure that we end up with the people in Washington who represent what we believe in. All right, let's get to some phone calls. We are off to L.A. this time. Dale, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, I did a little research on an answer.
Okay. What do we got?
You can't run on a dealer plate. Every state, there's no way to prorate a dealer license plate. So you'd have to have a dealer plate in every jurisdiction you went to. So that's not going to work for you. The drive-away license plate that the truck transport companies use when they're transporting the stacks of new trucks, I thought that might work, but they're not recognized in every jurisdiction. So if you wound up in an area that didn't recognize that plate, you'd wind up having to buy a permit and messing with IFTA. And, you know, with CSA 2010 coming in, I just don't think you need the aggravation on your DOT number.
Wow. You know, this is interesting, and we've seen this before, where you get into situations where there are so many different government agencies involved that there doesn't ever seem to be a correct answer. Because there's conflicts between different agencies, and what does a, like, I know the dealers will drive vehicles around for sales purposes, and according to, I'm not sure, I'll have to go back and see, the dealer plate allows for that. But obviously there are jurisdictions that say, no, you can't do that.
Well, you, for example, if you had a Montana dealer plate, you could drive around Montana without a trailer. But as soon as you went into Idaho, now you need an Idaho dealer plate.
That's, yeah, well, it's interesting. Because I know, you know, just knowing now, dealing with the glider kits and how that works, a lot of times there will be a customer in Texas who is considering buying, say, 30 trucks. So they'll drive a truck from Tennessee to Texas to show the truck. And the truck that they're driving there is not titled because it's not sold. So without it being titled, how do you ever put a plate on it?
Well, you know, if you were bobtailing around, then, you know, from point A to point B, you know, to go show the truck, you could probably get away with a dealer plate and permits. But, you know, to kind of tour around like you're doing and show the truck off, you're probably going to be a lot better off with a passenger license plate on it and a sticker on the side of the trailer that says private, not for hire.
Yeah, and that's, again, this is where you run into the huge conflicts. And I appreciate you doing the research on this. We've had this question before from people who want to use Class 8 vehicles for recreational vehicles. And we've talked to people who have run into real conflicts between what's a recreational vehicle, what's a commercial vehicle, and once it's considered commercial, what laws are you subject to and how do you meet them? I mean, it really gets kind of crazy.
It really is a dog's breakfast. And for somebody that, you know, you really have to be careful and make sure that if you are going to use it as an RV, that any markings remotely tying it to a commercial vehicle are all long gone.
Yeah, even something as simple as a logo anywhere on the vehicle.
Well, that's where it gets into, you know, into that maybe and that's final area. Yeah, it's a real fine line and so open to interpretation. The nice part about it, if it's passenger plated and, you know, you can show living quarters and, you know, this is more of an RV, you know, there's nothing to, you know, to write you a ticket on that's going to affect your DOT number.
Right.
If you went to commercially license this and, you know, it is such a gray area, you know, you're going to wind up with some tickets and a lot of aggravation I don't think you really want.
No, and that's really why we're trying to figure out the best way ahead of time, because we are going to be commercial. I mean, we realize we're going to be commercial, and we'd like to comply as much as possible. We're not sure what we're supposed to comply with. So that's what we're trying to figure out. You know, I talked to somebody who was in this situation. They were pulling, they were racing. And technically, there was really nothing commercial about their racing other than they won some prize money once in a while. You know, it's really a hobby. And here's another interesting conflict in our government. If it's a hobby, and the IRS, I mean, if we have to look at the IRS for this, because a lot of people want to turn racing enterprises into something commercial because there's huge write-offs then. If it's a business, we can take a loss, and just about everybody who races loses money, you know, or raises horses. Or there's a whole bunch of examples of this. And according to the IRS, look, you don't have a business, you have a hobby. And if it's a hobby, you can't write off any losses. And then you go out on the road, but you're considered commercial. So which one is it? Same government, but we have a whole bunch of different rules. And they actually, in the state of Florida, ended up with $8,000 worth of tickets. Because once the state of Florida at the scale determined that they were commercial, they wrote a ticket for every violation they could come up with.
Yeah, you know, and that's the rodeo community, you know, winds up in the same boat. Because, yeah, is this a hobby? Is it a business? You know, you're selling horses, you're selling livestock, but you're competing,
right,
and you're not really making any money at it. Yeah, it's a huge Pandora's box.
Yeah, and the reason I, you know, first of all, we wanted to research it for us because we're involved in it, but we get a lot of questions about these kind of – we have a lot of listeners that are driving some sort of Class 7 or Class 8 vehicle. They don't – it's not clearly commercial. They're not really sure what they should do, and I've researched it in the past, and I keep coming up with, you know, your line of maybe and that's final. That's the best I can come up with.
And I wish I could, you know, I wish I could give you a more definitive maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I appreciate it. I mean, we'll continue to look. I'm still not exactly sure what we're going to do with this, but we do know it's on the road. Right now, it's purely RV. There's no commercial markings whatsoever. So I guess for the moment, we're probably safe. But we'll have to see. And in the near future, it is going to have commercial markings. We're going to have to decide how we're going to meet all these requirements. So we'll keep you informed and let you know. And again, thanks to Dale Howard for doing that research for us. I've got to get to a break. We'll be right back. Stick around. You're on the Road Dog, Sirius 147, XM 171. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Good evening. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Trucking Business and Beyond. The website is letstruck.com. We're going to get right back to some phone calls. Let's go to Fort Worth, Texas. Matt, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Kevin. How are you
great
doing
today? Great to have you here. I'm doing great. What's on your mind tonight?
I'm really excited. I've purchased a lot of the products that you guys endorse on the website, and I'm just kind of trying to figure out what kind of gain am I going to get. Let me go ahead and name off a few. I've got the OPS, EcoPure. I'm going to have that put on Monday. I got the Fleet air filter, and I also purchased the muffler from Pittsburgh Power. So,
okay.
And let me give one more thing here. I went and bought the Mobil Delvac full synthetic, not the blend, but it's full synthetic. Yeah, it's pretty expensive.
Yeah, it is. It really is. It's kind of sticker shock when you have to do an oil change with full synthetic.
But I think I'm really going to receive a big return on that, though.
I think so. And let's kind of go through all the things that are going to happen here.
Okay.
First of all, the EcoPure. One of the reasons we talk about this product so much is because there are so many advantages. You see the price of synthetic oil. It is expensive. I'm a big believer in synthetic, though. It's better for the engine. We have better protection, even though the oil itself is lighter and thinner. And because it's lighter and thinner, we get improved fuel economy. The tests are anywhere from 1 to 2% improved fuel economy over a mineral-based oil.
Wow.
Much better cold weather starting. Wait until you go to start your truck and it's, 0 degrees outside. You're going to be amazed at how much easier it turns over. So that's the first advantage of going to the EcoPure is we can now afford to run synthetic because we're probably going to get at least 100,000 miles out of it. And it's very likely, depending on the engine, we may get 150. We may even get as high as 200,000 miles out of that oil. So now, the cost of that oil doesn't matter so much anymore because it's going to be in the truck a long time. And the fuel savings alone over that time will cover the cost.
Exactly.
So the next advantage of the EcoPure is that under our current logic. We put clean oil in a truck. We pick some random number, 15,000 miles, because that's what everybody told us we should do. And we put the clean oil in. At 15,000 miles, we take it back out and we throw it away. Well, was it dirty? And if it was, we're already doing damage to the engine because we allowed the oil to get dirty. If it's not dirty, then we just threw away good oil. Those are the only two options. Well, rather than do that, we put the EcoPure on, and now we just keep that oil clean, which is better for the engine, and we're not throwing away oil. So that makes a lot of sense. The next advantage, not only the cost savings of not throwing the oil away, is that rather than change the oil, you're going to change the filter and do an oil sample. And this may now, when I first started talking about, oil bypass and all the different systems I've tried, I was really looking at the pure cost savings of it, which I love. But I really think now that the more I learn about oil analysis, the more I think this may be the really big benefit. Because the more I look at this and the more I learn about it, the more I see how many conditions we catch early on in the analysis that saves so much money over the long run. By analyzing that oil every 20 or 25,000 miles, we catch fuel leaks, we catch coolant leaks, we catch, metal intrusions, things that would go on for a long time if we weren't analyzing the oil that would ultimately do a lot of damage and cost us a lot of money. So just in that one product alone, we've got multiple benefits, and the payback on that is just tremendous. I mean, just pure cost savings, between oil changes and fuel economy, you're going to see $2,000 to $2,500 a year back in your pocket. Then we get all the other benefits on top of it. Now, if you go to the other two things that you've done, the Fleet Air Filter and the Pittsburgh Power Muffler. The biggest improvement you'll see right off the bat is the engine is now breathing the way it should. We're getting air in, and we're getting air out. Nice and easy, a lot of flow, which is good for the engine, good for fuel economy. And the great thing about the Fleet Air Filter is that paper is just a lousy element. It's one-dimensional. So in order to get it to filter properly, we have to make it very tightly woven and dense in order to make it trap the dirt because it's only one-dimensional. Well, now we make it so tightly woven and dense that the engine doesn't breathe right. When we go to foam, we can make foam multi-dimensional. We can make it much thicker. So it's kind of hard. At first, I had a tough time with this. If it breathes better, which it does, I thought it must trap less dirt because we're allowing more air through. So how can it not trap? Well, it's because it's multi-dimensional. So the engine's breathing better, and we're trapping dirt better. So we get improved fuel economy, and we have less dirt in the engine, which, you know, are both great things. And then the muffler is kind of a no-brainer. We're just letting the exhaust out of the engine better, so the engine isn't working as hard to do it. So if I had to put a number on it, I would say when you do everything, you should see at least a half mile per gallon improvement.
Really?
Wow. And it could be more, yeah.
That's, would that come out to about $4,000 to $5,000 a year savings in your back pocket?
Yeah. Yep.
And then another quick question. I'll let somebody else jump in here. But on the oil filters on the engine, because I got a DDEC 3, and
right.
Does that change them at every 20,000 like it would with the OPS filter? Or do I just leave those on there?
You're running the 10-inch filter, right?
Right. I got two big long filters.
Yeah.
On the engine.
I would change the EcoPure filter every 25,000, and
okay.
I would change the spin on filters every 50. The two
okay.
big spin on
oh, wow.
your
Only
standard
50, huh?
every 50,000. Yeah. Every other time you do the EcoPure, I would do the OEM filters.
Oh, wow. See, I'm already seeing the cost savings today because when I went to the Speedco, because I'm going to do all the switchover on Monday, I just got two fuel filter and I had them grease the chassis. And I think it was like $40 or $50 for everything. So I'm already seeing the benefit right now.
Oh, yeah. 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 And, you know, the OPS, you know, you just do it yourself. The spin-on filter is so easy, and it's
yeah.
so easy to take a sample. You do that part, like you said, let Speedco do, you know, a couple fuel filters and a grease for $40. Can't beat it.
Yeah, that's the thing, you know, when I look at the Gulf Post bypass filter, and it's a big, long cylinder. It mounts on the back of the frame. It's too big, you know, and the OPS, it's small, it's compact, and I think them guys are just genius, you know, for developing that product.
Well, you know, I've used a lot of different filters over the years. I've tried them all, and the good news is they all worked. I mean, they all did what they said they were going to do, so I recommend everybody have some sort of a bypass system. But after trying them all, I settled on the OPS when they really first came out. I think it's been almost 10 years now. And the thing that I really like about the company is that they never settled for the first, you know, development of the product. They've continued to improve on their filter elements. They've continued to improve on the product. And then the EcoPure was just a huge leap forward over everything else on the market, even over the, you know, their original product, the OPS-1. And they're constantly looking at new ways to, you know, to move the product forward. It's not staying
wow.
the same. They're improving it all the time.
Well, I'll let you know what happens when I get all that stuff on, and I'll give you a buzz back and give you some feedback on that, too.
Fantastic. I appreciate it. I'll look forward to it.
All right. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thanks for calling. I'm looking at the clock, and we're going to have to get to a break here. But we've got lots more stuff coming up, so stick around. As always, check out the website. It's letstruck.com. Lots of really interesting discussions going on. There's lots of great groups, great forums. There's just way too much to try to explain here on the radio. You have to experience it. And the way to do that is to go to the website, letstruck.com. If you're not a member, it only takes you a couple minutes to sign up, and it doesn't cost you anything at all. We're going to be right back after the break, so don't go away. You're on the Road Dog, Sirius 147, XM 171. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, we're going to continue on with the recording here, but I just want to let you know we've got room for questions, so now's your chance. We always hear from people that it's hard to get through on the live show. Now's your chance. Press 1 on your phone if you've got a question, a comment, a topic, whatever it is. We've got room to get through. We've got two more segments to record here. So we've got room for you if you want to jump in right now. Press 1 on your phone. You'll talk to Lisa first, and we're going to get back to the recording. So here we go. Good evening. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Trucking Business and Beyond. The website is letstruck.com. We're going right back to some phone calls. Let's head off this time to Kurt in New Jersey. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call. You've been a big help for me in selecting a truck and a bunch of other stuff that you guys talk about on the show here.
Good.
I was able to find a Echo Pure on eBay for a very good price, and it's brand new. Got all the parts to it, and I have yet to install it. I have a Detroit 99. So
okay.
I put it on, but I just purchased the truck, and it has the previous owner I got it from said he had about 3,000 to 5,000 miles on the current oil. So that's not a whole lot of oil. I don't know even what kind of oil. So what should I do? And should I just do a full throw out the old stuff, put in, you know, nice synthetic stuff in there and change all the filters, including the full flow ones? Or what's your suggestion on that?
I don't think I would. I mean, really, any oil that we would put in a truck is sufficient to run the truck on. And I don't like to waste money. I mean, there's already oil in there, and whether it's whatever. I mean, I'm assuming that they put in something that met, you know, the requirements of a diesel engine, whatever that happens to be. I think the oil that's in there is going to be fine. With only 3,000 or 5,000 miles on it, if you put the Echo Pure on it, it's going to clean the oil up. So I would leave it in there for now. It's already in there. Let's get some use out of it. Let's get some oil analysis results, you know, and maybe we get, you know, two or three filter changes out of this oil, and we get a pattern. We get to see how the engine's operating. You know, one of the things I would hate to do is have you put in full synthetic and then find out this engine has some sort of a glycol or fuel intrusion. You know, and now we might end up dumping really expensive oil. We've already got oil in there. Let's see what happens. There's another benefit to this, too, that I like. is you can run this mineral oil that's in there. We'll get a baseline on what's going on, you know, with the oil analysis, but we'll also get a baseline on fuel mileage, and you'll get to see the improvement when you switch over to synthetic.
Oh, okay. I thought it was. I didn't know there was even a that measurable of economy difference in going from mineral to synthetic.
If we're watching our fuel mileage closely and we don't have any other major changes, we should be able to measure the difference. Now, it's not a huge difference, but we can usually measure it. And, you know, I'd like to see that. The more data we get, you know, the numbers are good. So you've already got the oil in there. I would run it and get a baseline. So you got this on eBay, huh?
Yeah, you were talking about it about 2 weeks ago. Well, I've been listening to you for a while. You've helped me out a lot, like I said. And I just said, you know what, I'm going to check this out. So I jumped online, and sure enough, I typed it in, and this thing came up. And I said, well, I got to watch this. And I was fortunate enough that I don't think anybody else was listening to you that night that thought about jumping on eBay. Because I think I was the only guy looking. I was the only one that made an offer, and that's how I got it. So it was good.
Well, you know, eBay is just such an amazing technology, and the way eBay has changed things. I was just thinking about this the other day. I don't use eBay a lot, but I've been on eBay on and off since its early days. I mean, when it first started, and I tend to buy unusual stuff. And I would consider an Echo Pure purchase on eBay kind of unusual. I wouldn't have even thought of looking myself. So it's pretty interesting, but I just actually bought a car on eBay a couple weeks ago, and this is what made me start thinking about this, is all the other businesses that have sprouted or grown because of eBay. Because I bought this mm-hmm. car, and I got a killer deal on it. I mean, I wouldn't have found this car any other way, because when I bought it, I don't even remember where we were. We travel around so much now, I don't remember where I was when I bid on it. But the car was in Seattle. I mean, we're somewhere on the East Coast when I found it, bid on it, won the bid. And I started looking at it, and we could certainly drive out and pick it up, but we weren't going that way for any other reason. And when I looked at the cost of fuel and time and everything else, I can have the car delivered for less than half of what it would cost me to go get it. But I got thinking about that in our industry. I mean, that's what we do. We deliver stuff. Well, there's a whole segment out there now of auto haulers that are busy because of eBay.
Well, ironically, you're talking one of them.
Oh, is that right?
That's exactly what I do. Yeah, that's exactly what I do, yep.
Oh, well, how interesting. I mean, I hadn't really thought about it until I had to deal with it. And, you know, there's a whole bidding process on that. We went to a website and we put in the move. You know, we've got a car in Seattle. We need it delivered to Tennessee. And we got quotes from three different companies on the cost of doing it.
Mm-hmm. And that's free, too, to you.
I know. It's just kind of crazy. But without eBay, that never would have happened. I never would have been able to buy that car, you know, in Seattle, and there would be no delivery to be done. I mean, there's another whole industry built up around that. I just thought that was kind of wild.
Yeah. I got two other questions. One is real quick, and the other one's
sure.
I don't know how quick it'll be, but again, a new truck, Detroit 12.7, 99, 10-speed, 358 gears, and they're 22.5, not low pros on the rear, or all around, really. So recommendations on that for future stuff? All of them have really great – the back eight are all retreads. So
okay.
they're actually in very good shape. They have a very – mileage or anything like that. So recommendations,
okay.
Currently running, you know, in the low 60s at top speed, you know, for me.
Okay.
So.
With that 99 engine and 358s, you really want the smallest tire you can get away with.
Okay.
A low pro 22.5, absolutely. And I don't care how much rubber is on those tires. I want you to make it one of your goals when you sit down to budget. And, you know, you may not be able to change them tomorrow, but I would put it in your plan that as soon as you can replace those tires, I would do it. And, you know, if you want to stick with duals, I would go with the XDA Energy in a low profile. And I like the XDA 3s on the steer. And I know it's hard sometimes to get rid of tires when they're, you know, when they're new. But it's one of those things that it will cost you more money to keep those tires than it will cost you to just literally throw them away if you had to and buy newer tires.
Okay. And is there any way to determine the, let's just say that those are the tires that were on there now. It doesn't make sense then, right?
What do you mean? Uh-oh. Am I losing you?
Oh, yep. There you are. You're back.
Yeah, go ahead. Say that again.
How do I make the determination that they are worthy of being tossed to replace with new?
Here's the thing. If we know that we've got a good fuel-efficient casing, and we know that a good fuel-efficient retread was put on it, then we could actually go in and calculate the rolling resistance. But 95% of the retreads on the market, that's not the case. It's mixed casings, lousy compounds on the retread. So just because they're retreads, I can say with certainty, as soon as you can replace them with a fuel-efficient tire, it's worth it. If you had the budget and you could do it tomorrow, I would say do it tomorrow. If it's going to take you 3 months to save the money, then I would make it one of my top priorities.
Okay. Front steers as well? Going low pro?
What do you have on the steers right now?
I think they're Bridgestones or Bridge.
What I would do on the steers is I would check the rolling resistance chart on the website, and if the tire that's on there is under 115 for a rolling resistance, no, you know what? I'm going to change my mind on that. No matter what you have on the steers, leave them on for at least 50,000 miles. And the reason we're going to do that is we want to see the wear pattern on them, since we don't know anything about this truck. So don't worry so much about fuel mileage on those. Leave that on, and that way if we've got something wrong in the front end, we're not going to wipe out a new tire that we just bought. Leave those on, keep an eye on them for 50,000 miles, and then give me a call back. By that time, we'll have more to talk about. Stick around. We'll be right back. You're on the Road Dog, Sirius 147 XM 171. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Good evening. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Trucking Business and Beyond. We're down to the final segment of the program, so I'm going to get right back to the calls. Let's head off to Arizona this time. Steve, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Kevin. Last time I called you when the representative from Evans was there, I didn't have all my figures compiled, so I sat down yesterday and figured out. I went on fuel gauges and copied down all my gallons and miles. And since we did the conversion with the Evans and later on the fleet air filter, in 46,251.6 miles, I burned 5,053.74 gallons. That makes 9.15 miles to the gallon.
9.15 over almost 50,000 miles. So, you know, we're not talking about one of those great trips where we were light with a 40-mile-an-hour tailwind and we got some great fuel mileage. We're talking about almost 50,000 miles. So that's that is an accurate running fuel mileage, and to be over 9 is just phenomenal. I mean, that's... I'm still amazed that we're able to do that.
Yeah, I do follow a lot of light stuff, but, you know, there's an Alaska trip in there, and, you know, there's some 80,000-pound stuff in there. And the exciting thing to me is that previously, I still haven't bested my top mileage, which was 10.77 miles, and that's one of those loads you're talking about where all the stars lined up. I started out in Denver and ended up in Tampa, where I filled up in Alabama. But when you think about it, between Denver and Dallas, there's a goes from 5,280 feet down to 154 feet. So that's like a 0.13% downgrade, you know, and I had a 35-mile-hour wind the whole way. So,
I was going to say, with the 35-mile-an-hour tailwind, can't you coast all the way from Denver to Dallas?
Yeah, just about. I mean, it's really nice. You can do that a lot from Cheyenne, Wyoming to North Platte, Nebraska, too. You'd be putting some really good numbers there. But the thing is, back then... the week before, I had a 6.07 miles to the gallon where I had a heavy load and I was pushing hard. And now since I've done the Evans, the lowest I've done is 8.02. That's my lowest. So, and
wow.
And I don't get in the level very often. I run the Northwest quite a bit. And like I said, I occasionally go up to Alaska. There's one Alaska trip in there. So I'm pretty pleased. And my plan here at the end of the year is to go to Super Singles on the truck and put in the I'm going to get the manifold too, because then I'll have the whole intake exhaust system all taken care of, because every time I do something it you can tell it works. So I'll kick it up from there. So
You know what's amazing, and I mean this is still interesting and exciting to me, is we're pushing such new territory on fuel mileage. I mean, when we talk about, and we've done it, you know, with the several of the signature trucks that are on the road. I mean, that's almost where you are now. I mean, you're almost to the point of all those same specs or very close to it. But when we start talking about trucks that are already averaging 9, which is what you've got here. What I'm, you know, interested in is, can we keep improving that? I mean, we know that if we change tires, physics tells us our fuel economy has to improve. I mean, it's been proven enough times. But what I'm interested in is what is the improvement when we're already this high? We know that when you port and jet hot coat the manifold, the exhaust is going to flow better. Fuel economy should improve. But what we don't know is how much on a truck that's already doing so well. And so I'll be really interested to see what happens. It's just kind of wild to hear those numbers. Yeah,
yeah.
I know.
Well,
especially because you're the one spending the money.
Yeah. Well, trust me, it's well worth it. And, you know, I've been doing a lot with the aerodynamics, and, you know, I've had the high numbers in the past, but it's so exciting now to get the low numbers up. And when you go on fuel gauges, when you look at the graph, it used to be like a sawtooth, you know, but now it's almost a straight line, you know. It varies up and down a little bit, you know. And,
it's interesting because one of the things that I've noticed over the years and one of the things that I've said is, when we see those variations in fuel mileage, highs and lows, and the bigger that gap gets, the more I've found that it probably indicates something isn't exactly right. When we find a truck that has a mechanical problem, we tend to see bigger gaps. We see bigger spreads. When when you take a truck that's got a mechanical problem and you put it under a heavy load, and like you said, running the Pacific Northwest or up into Alaska, when something's wrong or something isn't exactly right, we see those lows go even lower. But when we get everything operating really efficiently, we tend to see more consistent fuel mileage, and that's exactly what you're seeing here.
Right. Well, I think before I had quite a bit of the aerodynamics dialed in, so when I wasn't heavy, when the aerodynamics was a bigger portion of your fuel usage, you know, the numbers
right.
were high, but then when I was heavy and pulling hard or, then the rolling resistance and the engine and all of that meant more, and it's, you know, then the numbers are low, so.
That makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. Interesting. I appreciate the update and the feedback, and keep us informed. It will really be interesting now to see what happens from this point forward. Let's squeeze in another one here. Let's go to Ted in Pennsylvania. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How you doing?
Doing great. What's on your mind tonight?
Yeah, it's just a fair tax. I think it's a good idea. I hear you talk about it. But one thing that I don't hear anybody talk about is what's going to happen with the funding for all the nonprofits?
What funding? Who cares?
What I'm saying is a lot of the funding for the nonprofits is there because of people trying to get tax evasion. And you know, I think that the nonprofits is going to stand against the fair tax for that very reason.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, there are a lot of people that are against the fair tax because it digs into their power or their pocket or... Here's what I believe, though, and certainly there are going to be some exceptions to this. People do charitable things for a lot of different reasons. Maybe I'm naive on this, but I don't think the number one factor in why we do charitable work is to get the tax break, because that doesn't really make sense. I mean, it's kind of like people who tell me they bought Chrome because you get a tax break. Well, you spent a dollar to save 30 cents. If we just eliminated the tax, the same thing is accomplished. So we do charitable work because we want to do charitable work. We want to help somebody, or there are a lot of different reasons. But I don't think that the tax break is the reason that most of those things exist. I think that it's the opposite. I think because of our burdensome tax structure that we have right now, it's harder to go out and do this charitable work because of if you've ever seen how many hoops you have to jump through to start a true 501c3, a nonprofit, you would see how tough that really is. But you know, that's an interesting point. I haven't really dug that deep into that part of it. So we would have to, I'd have to go back and do a little thinking on that. But again, I don't think that's why most people do the charitable work that they do. The good news is now that you won't even have to worry about that if you're a nonprofit. You won't have to jump through all of those hoops that you have to jump through now in order to make that happen. I'd like to discuss that again, and I'd like to discuss it more, but we're all out of time for tonight. The hour just flew by. I want to thank everybody for joining me. Stick around. Jonesy's coming up next with the all-night truck stop. You're on the Road Dog, Sirius 147, XM 171. Remember, be safe, be profitable, be responsible. Vote. It's coming up soon. Don't miss it. And master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford.